This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have declared that Winnie Mandela will have a national official funeral, which will be held on the 14th of April, and there will be an official memorial service on the 11th.
And that was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking there to mourners after he visited the family of the late Winnie Madikizela Mandela, the anti-apartheid activist who died yesterday. Also, doctors in Zimbabwe say they are ready to walk out again if the government does not meet its pledges for improved salaries and better supplies for hospitals. We'll have these stories and more for you, so do stay with us. There is lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. In our top story this hour, in South Africa, tributes to the late anti-apartheid activist Winnie Madikizela Mandela continue to pour in. She died Monday in Johannesburg following a long illness. Her passing will be marked by a state funeral and memorial service later this month. Tusa Kamalo reports for us from Johannesburg.
Lioness, heroine and mother of the nation, these are the words being used to describe the late Winnie Madikizela Mandela. She died at the age of 81. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who visited Mandela family on Monday, described her as a voice of defiance and resistance in the face of repression.
We have declared that Winnie Mandela will have a national official funeral, which will be held on the 14th of April, and there will be an official memorial service on the 11th. But then again, there will be many other memorial functions right across.
Winnie Mandela was a prominent figure in the battle to end white minority rule alongside her late ex-husband, Nelson Mandela. They were married for nearly four decades. After her husband was jailed in 1962, she held fast through harassment, arrests, restrictions, and imprisonment by the apartheid regime. However, she could be a polarizing figure. After her divorce with Nelson Mandela in 1996, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which investigated crimes committed during apartheid period, concluded that she had been involved in assault, murder and abduction. She was also later convicted of fraud and slapped with a suspended sentence. To mourners who have streamed to her home since her passing on Monday, she remains a revered activist for freedom. Johannesburg resident Susan Mahlodi says she will forever be missed.
She was a true heroine, that lady, because she stood up against apartheid. She stood by her husband, Tata Mandela, when he was at Robben Island, raising up kids alone, and she fought for us as ladies as well. So I'm really saddened about her passing on.
The ruling ANC at the party level has also expressed its grief. The party said Winnie Mandela's resilience and courage inspired freedom struggle, not just in South Africa, but across the continent. The South African Communist Party chose to describe her as an activist for gender equality and a democratic revolutionary. And the Nelson Mandela Foundation said all South Africans are indebted to her, whether they acknowledge it or not. The South African religious community is also paying tribute. Njongonkulu Ndungane is a former Archbishop of the Anglican Church in South Africa.
She touched our hearts, and I think that she championed the cause of the poorest of the poor, being the voice of the voiceless. She became commonly known as the mother of the nation. She was just at the heart of giving us youngsters a hope for the future.
The African Union Commission, in its tribute statement, said Winnie Mandela will be remembered as a fearless campaigner who sacrificed much of her life for freedom in South Africa. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Well, South Africa has begun preparations for the funeral of one of the country's most celebrated and controversial figures. Winnie Madikizela Mandela spent decades fighting apartheid while her then-husband Nelson Mandela was imprisoned by the apartheid government. Our reporter in Johannesburg, Darren Taylor, has vivid personal recollections of this remarkable woman. He spoke to VOA's William Eagle.
Winnie Mandela was a paradox. She was a woman to whom the masses turned for guidance when they were at their most downtrodden in South Africa. Through her courage in the face of abuse, she gave them hope, and they began looking upon her as their mother. I know people whose parents were political prisoners at Paulsmoor Prison in Cape Town when Nelson Mandela was held there. Now, while Winnie was allowed to visit her husband on special occasions such as Christmas, birthdays, etc., others weren't. They weren't accorded these privileges. They used to arrive when she used to arrive at the same time. They used to clamor and beg at the gates for the warders and prison officials to let them in. Now, Winnie would invariably say, well, if they can't visit, if they're not allowed to get in, I won't visit. That's just an example of the humanity that she also had in great measure. Also, at great personal risk, her home in Soweto was a refuge to many activists who would hide there from the apartheid security police. At her home, she'd feed the hungry, she would pay people's school fees. Certainly in the time that I was there, I never saw her turn many people away if they needed something. And yet, perhaps understandably, because of the hardship she'd experienced, Winnie was also an extremely angry and even vengeful person. For her, not the path of reconciliation. For example, she infamously advocated the use of the horrific necklace method to kill people, basically murder people who had been branded as sellouts.
These necklaces were basically tires set aflame around people's necks.
Yeah, the necklace was an old tire filled with petrol, fuel, and then placed around the person's neck and set alight, but was widely used during the 1980s and advocated by Winnie Mandela.
Darren, you once accompanied a group of young Scandinavian journalists to Mrs. Mandela's house in Soweto. What happened there?
The Scandinavians expected Winnie to also embrace them in similar fashion. After all, they considered themselves to be on her side. But instead, what they found was a rather aloof, disdainful, proud, almost arrogant woman who basically scoffed at their questions. I remember one asking a rather silly question, how does it feel to be the former wife of Nelson Mandela? Winnie bristled with anger and shot back, I am not the former wife of Nelson Mandela. I am Winnie Mandela. She hated being in Nelson's shadow. Another journalist, Scandinavian journalist, inquired about her being called the mother of the nation. And she spat back and said, I'm only a mother to my daughters. I remember one leaning over to me and whispering in a Norwegian accent, she's not what I expected. And I couldn't help but smile, because Winnie Mandela can be seen as the dark side of South Africa's rainbow. She was hard and unforgiving, and one of those people that, if she's on your side, you're very grateful.
You reported also on Winnie Mandela's appearance before South Africa's Truth Commission back in 1997. What do you remember about this event?
Well, this hearing probed Winnie's alleged role in a number of gross human rights violations, including 8 murders. But what I remember most is Winnie's contempt for the whole process and a clear dislike of the man who chaired the hearings, Archbishop Tutu. At times, she appeared to laugh at him and other members of the Truth Commission. Every time an allegation was put to her, she'd simply respond with one word, ridiculous, and she would describe her former comrades who were delivering evidence against her as mental patients. The most significant moment at her Truth Commission hearing for me was when Desmond Tutu pleaded with her, Mrs. Mandela, you are a great woman. No one doubts your contribution to the struggle against apartheid, but sometimes in life we become so traumatized that we become what we hate most. A sarcastic smile creased Mrs. Mandela's face as she looked at Tutu, and the closest she came to apologizing for her past misdeeds was to sneer and repeat Tutu's words and to say, yes, I'm also saying that things went horribly wrong, but there was absolutely no remorse from her. And I know that Tutu was devastated afterwards. The Truth Commission later found that Winnie Mandela had indeed been responsible for a number of gross human rights violations.
Fascinating account there. That was reporter Darren Taylor in Johannesburg, South Africa, speaking with VOA's William Eagle. To the Middle East now, where Israel has done an about-face after agreeing to a compromise on illegal immigration from Africa. Robert Berger is in Jerusalem with more.
Israel has abruptly canceled a controversial plan for the forced expulsion of African migrants who entered the country illegally over the past decade. Most came from war-torn Eritrea and Sudan. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made the unexpected announcement.
16,250
He said that under a deal with the UN Refugee Agency, some 16,000 Africans will be sent to Western countries, including Canada, Italy, and Germany. More than 20,000 will be allowed to remain in Israel for at least the next 5 years. Netanyahu's right-wing government rejects claims by the Africans that they are refugees, describing them as infiltrators and economic migrants. In February, Israel began issuing deportation orders to 20,000 African males, presenting them with an ultimatum: leave for Africa within 2 months or face imprisonment. That raised the ire of the UN Refugee Agency and Israeli human rights groups, which charged that sending the migrants back to Africa would endanger their lives. Israeli refugee activist Shula Keshet welcomed the deal. She said that Israel has a moral obligation to help the Africans because the Jewish state was built by refugees fleeing the Holocaust. Munim Aharon, who fled to Israel from Sudan, breathed a sigh of relief. He said the deal removes the veil of uncertainty hanging over the African community in Israel and gives people hope for the future and a normal life. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Moving to Southern Africa, doctors in Zimbabwe's public hospitals have returned to work after a month-long strike over pay raises and other grievances. They see their return as a compromise and say they're ready to walk out again if the government doesn't fulfill its new commitments. Reporter Kudzai Zvenevashe has this report.
Dr. Mxolisi Ngwenya is the vice president and spokesperson of the Zimbabwe Hospitals Doctors Association.
Following the collective bargaining agreement, we have decided to compromise to say that our patients cannot continue to suffer. Government had made us an offer, and we said, let's take it for now, or at least work towards going to the point where we had actually requested to meet certain demands that may have not yet been met.
Ngwenya says they were assured that hospitals would be stocked with adequate medicine and equipment, and their allowances were reviewed upwards. One key agreement was that Zimbabwe abides by the Abuja Declaration and allocates the health sector 15% of the next national budget. Doctors returned to work on the 31st of March and were in full force today after resolving work schedules that were disrupted by Easter holidays and the strike. Edmo Chisora, a patient suffering from a series of stomach aches, is relieved doctors are back at work.
Now that they're back at work, I feel that I'm going to live, I'm going to survive, and so will a lot more people that are sick.
Now that the strike is resolved, the government may take a breather, but not for long. Zimbabwe's teachers' associations marched in the streets of Harare last week and are talking about a possible walkout next month. Their demands also include pay raises. Obet Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Association of Zimbabwe.
We wanted to give them a notice that if they don't address those urgent issues, we are going to withdraw our labor come second term, which begins in May. Our salaries were last reviewed in 2013 after negotiations were done in 2012. So we appreciate that the economic upheavals that they've gone through in our country.
Masaraure says, on average, teachers earn $285 in basic salary. They want rural allowances reviewed and reinstatement of vacation days that were withdrawn in 2016. This and the security of teachers in this election cycle are the key issues they want addressed before they return to work in May. Shakurai Masara is a parent and shares his thoughts on the potential teachers' strike.
It's very unfortunate if that is the result of what we're getting now. For some school fees paying parents, like myself, I don't owe a school any fees, and I expect my kids to go to school. If I don't pay school fees, my kids are kicked out of school. So it doesn't make sense to me.
Doctors say they will not hesitate to go back on strike if the government fails to fill their end of the bargain. Time can only tell if a teacher's strike will materialize. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
In Sierra Leone, both sides are claiming they're ahead in the vote count for the runoff presidential election. Official results aren't expected until Thursday in the West African country. But backers of opposition candidate Julius Maada Bio are doing their own vote count and say he's ahead by about 8 percentage points. But supporters of Samura Kamara of the ruling All People's Congress say their candidate holds a comfortable lead. Bio had less than a 1 percentage point lead in the first round of ballot early last month that set up last Saturday's runoff. Election monitors have expressed concern about possible violence as the vote count drags on. Bio briefly led the country in 1996 as head of a military junta. Kamara is a close ally of outgoing President Ernest Bai Koroma, who was barred by constitutional term limits from seeking re-election. The United Nations says a peacekeeper's base in the Central African Republic came under heavy fire today from a rebel group. A UN statement condemning the attack says one peacekeeper was killed and 11 others were injured. It happened during a gun battle that lasted for several hours at the temporary base in Tagbara near the southern city of Bambari. There was no word on casualties among the attackers. Later, the peacekeepers found the bodies of 21 civilians, including 4 women and 4 children. It was not immediately clear how they died. The UN deployed reinforcements to the area. The CAR has been hit by violence since the mainly Muslim Seleka rebel alliance overthrew Francois Bozize in 2013. Cameroon is pleading with its traditional rulers to help convince thousands of youths to return to the English-speaking towns and villages from which they fled. The residents left to escape violence sparked by an armed separatist movement in Cameroon's 2 Anglophone regions. Morki Edwin Kinzeka traveled to a village on the border with Nigeria and filed this report.
A campfire burns in a remote village on Cameroon's northwestern border with Nigeria, where 7 men and 5 boys roast cocoyam for supper. The eldest among them, 45-year-old Bruno Mfor, says the group has spent at least a week in the bush after violence broke out in the town of Tadu. Armed separatists attacked the town, he says. Then soldiers began burning houses and arresting people indiscriminately. Many people were tortured or wounded.
I didn't mean for bush, so I don't know if we did this for go Nigeria or even go in Nigeria because for place I didn't know, I don't know whether.
He says if he and his friends had the means, they would leave the bush where they are hiding and cross over to Nigeria because they are not safe in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon, where they were treated like animals and terrorists before they fled. In January, Nigerian authorities said they had arrested at least 2 dozen Cameroonians receiving military training on its territory. Mfor says since then, Cameroon's military has been sweeping through border villages, searching for armed separatists whom they suspected of either going to or returning from Nigeria. This month, the UN Refugee Agency reported that since mid-2017, tens of thousands of people had fled Cameroon's 2 Anglophone regions where the separatist movements are active. English speakers there say they are discriminated against by the country's French-speaking majority. Paul Atanganji, Cameroon's Minister of Territorial Administration, says thousands are hiding in bushes and mountains around the border with Nigeria. Last week, he visited the 2 English-speaking regions to plead for the displaced populations to return. He says many of those escaping have weapons.
They have to come out of the bushes, go back to their villages and put down the guns. If they do so, it's fine for them. We have recovered a lot of guns, a lot of weapons, a lot of explosives brought by people who are in the bushes. So we are asking them to repent and go out of those atrocities, because you cannot succeed. We have a strong nation. We have solid institutions. And there's no hiding place for truants in Cameroon. You cannot hide.
But many of those who fled, like 30-year-old Les Lingala, say they are scared of the Cameroonian military.
I don't know.
Ngala says he is escaping Cameroon's military, especially the gendarmes. He says before he fled, even little children would escape whenever they saw a military person, because they either had seen or heard how the soldiers mistreated people. He says his motorcycle was seized by people he recognized as from the Cameroonian military, not separatist fighters. The military has denied the allegations, saying the separatists are causing the violence. Didier Bajek, a spokesperson for Cameroon's military, said soldiers have remained professional as they carry out their duties to protect people and property. Mfomi Bala, an elder from northwestern Cameroon, says Nji is turning on traditional rulers because the population still listens to them after losing confidence in the administration and the military.
We have seen the bloodshed, and we ourselves are tired of this war. We too cry for peace, and we have assured the minister that we shall do everything within our means and power to facilitate the peaceful return of our people.
In October, the separatists declared what they call the Republic of Ambazonia and asked the military to surrender and join them or leave their territory. So far, hundreds of people and about 30 police officers and soldiers have been killed. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Sabongari, northwestern Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, do visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports that's coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Ivan Utko, thank you for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we continue our discussion about presidential transitions on the continent. We'll take a closer look at Sierra Leone, where a troubled runoff is underway. Sierra Leone's Supreme Court approved the Election Commission's request to delay the runoff presidential vote after the lifting of an interim injunction that had stalled preparations.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.